The following podcast contains explicit language.
Welcome to Mom and Dad Are Fighting, Slate's parenting podcast for Thursday, September 3rd, the Fluid Fashion Edition. I'm Dan Coyce. I'm a writer for Slate and the author of the book How to Be a Family. I'm the dad of Lyra, who's 15, and Harper, who's... she's 13! Holy shit, she just turned 13. We all live in Arlington, Virginia.
Yay, 13. I'm Jamila. I am a writer, contributor to Slate's Care and Feeding parenting column, and host of The Kids Are Asleep on Slate's YouTube and Facebook channels. I am mom to Naima, who is 7, and we live in Los Angeles, California.
I'm Elizabeth Newcamp. I write the homeschool and family travel blog Dutch Dutch Goose. I'm the mom to 3 littles, Henry 8, Oliver 6, and Teddy 3, and I'm located in Navarre, Florida.
Hey, everyone. I'm so excited to be back.
We're so glad to have you back.
Did anything happen while I was gone?
Oh, my God.
Today on the show, we've got a question about a 5-year-old's gender fluid fashion choices. We'll also be giving advice to the mom of an extroverted 12-year-old who has glommed on during quarantine. And as always, we'll have triumphs and fails and recommendations. I'm going to learn everything that you guys have been up to for the last 3 weeks. Via triumphs and fails. Jamila, do you want to start?
Yes, I actually have 2 triumphs. This is an update because we talked about my anxiety over Naima going to a school where there wasn't a large Black population. And so first day of school last week, and my greatest fears were realized. I picked her up after day 2. She did the first 2 days of school at her dad's house. I was there in the morning to cheer her on. And then, you know, on Tuesday, I pick her up. And so I'm like, so how many Black kids are in your class? She's like, you didn't even ask me how my first day was. And I'm like, well, we talked. Like, we had talked the day before. You know, like, I said, I'm sorry, I didn't ask exactly in those, you know, words, how was your first day? Also, I was there, so I didn't feel like I'd missed it because I was there for, like, the first hour. That's fine. And so anyway, you know, she says it was fine. And so then she reveals that she's the only Black kid in her class. And I'm like, this is my, worst case scenario, you know, because in my mind, yeah. I'm thinking, you know, it's not ideal for there to just be 2 of them because they might not like each other. It's not just about her having a crew of Black friends. It's about her not being alone, you know, in this space without people who share her experiences, with whom she can identify about certain things, you know, and even if they aren't the best of friends, that they can give each other that look, you know, that they're coming to school. Like, and I think we got a really powerful example of that this weekend with Chadwick Boseman's passing. Right? Like, Black kids and other kids were going to school heartbroken, but like the heartbreak that a lot of Black children are carrying is so different. Right? And so I wanted Naima to be in a space with teachers and kids that were going to understand that, right? At least a good number of them. And that's not what we were getting.
But so 0 Black kids in the class.
0 Black kids in the class. Right. And so on, so maybe say Thursday, I send the principal an email just saying, you know, this was a concern for me and I want to talk because there are 2 second grade classes. So there's the possibility that there is another Black child or other Black children and that they just, you know, Naima just got the luck of the draw, you know, whatever process they use. And I don't know how they separate the kids this year, because in previous years, you know, when COVID's not going on, the children actually are allowed to pick their own classrooms. Right. Really? They do this kind of hippy dippy thing where they, you know, take some time exploring. And yeah, so, you know, there were things about the school that were compelling and interesting to me. You know, I don't know how that works if all the kids want, you know, the cool teacher and everybody else is like, you know, and there's somebody who's just stuck. But whatever. Her teacher had sent me an email to introduce herself. I shared my concerns with her. You know, I used pretty dramatic words, horrified, dismayed, and just, you know, like, if there are other Black kids here, I'd like to know why, you know, they were separated from one another. And so finally, she connects me to the principal. We schedule a meeting. I text the teacher who would have been Naima's teacher at her old school, because I think I might, I don't know if I mentioned that on here, but she'd reached out because Naima hadn't been at school, and it turned out they hadn't processed her withdrawal paperwork yet. And so, you know, we had a nice conversation. It turns out that she's a fan of my work. And you know, she said, well, if you all come back, you know, we'd be happy to have you. And so I texted her like, hey, how serious was that? You know, if you come back, we'd be happy to have you thing. You know, just want to investigate all my options here.
This plot is really thickening, Jamila.
Yes, this pot gets, it's super thick. So she checks things out for me. And it turns out because they hadn't fully withdrawn Naima from the school, there was still a slot for her. You know, this is especially important because she was in a magnet program. So because if they had taken her out, she'd have to reapply and been waitlisted. And so Naima's back at her old school. We went home.
Oh my God. This is an incredible development in the space of 1 week.
Yeah.
In one week. And it's what she wanted. She never wanted to leave her old school. She felt some pressure from her brother, you know, and that he was saying, well, you don't want to go to school with me. And, you know, so that's kind of why she'd gotten on board with it. And she really missed her friends. And I just feel like at this time with so much that's been taken away from them, you know, like that kinship that she feels to these other children. If I didn't think it was a good school, it'd be a different conversation.
Right,
you know,
right,
like
right,
I stand
right.
behind the school and she was happy there. I was happy there. You know, we tried something else. It didn't work. I had a lovely conversation with the principal of the new school yesterday. I explained, you know, our decision. Naima's dad and stepmother, you know, agreed to, you know, let it be my call. They're happy with the other school. Their son is there. But there's also like 4 or 5 Black kids in his class. Mm-hmm. So, and it does turn out that another Black child popped up yesterday. So there, it looks like there would have been 2 Black girls in Naima's class. And
can you bring her with you?
I know. I'm like, you come on, baby. You know, and 2 boys in the other class. So I wonder if perhaps they were thinking about, you know, you're spreading out the Black kids. That's good for everyone else. Right. Like, I think those 4 Black kids would probably have had a better experience in the classroom together. You know, that's just my theory. So we're out. We're back home. Happy about that.
And they still had the spot. So that's perfect. Because that could have been like if that door had been closed. So
this seems like a real case of possibly you not filling out a form really working out for your benefit this time.
This is actually it. Well, to be fair, it was me because her dad wanted to. He had to fill out the form and I had the school iPad. He was like, you know, can you give me the iPad? And I was like, OK. And I kept forgetting. We weren't using it or anything because Naima changed the password on it like on the second week. And we just never got to use it again. I just kept forgetting. So my forgetfulness worked out really, really good. And also part of the reason that I'm very happy about her being in a Black school right now is that I just signed a lease. And we are moving into a new apartment.
Congratulations.
Yay.
Thank you. I will just say we will not be in Englewood anymore. We're not going to be in a Black neighborhood anymore. It's far more diverse. You know, I'm just going to say we're going to be in LA, but it's very different from where we are. And I was lucky to get something that had been vacant for a while. And because it had been vacant for a while and people are leaving, you know, landlords are dropping their rates. And so I got something I probably, you know, would not have been able to afford under normal circumstances. And it's got a lot of space and I'm really excited about it. And we're near a lot of amenities and bars and restaurants.
That's so good because you've been so like stressed about that and school. And so I feel like all of these things that have been weighing on you now are like settling.
Thank you.
Congratulations to you on renting the mansion from Down and Out in Beverly Hills. That's incredible.
How did you know? I'm very happy.
2 great triumphs. Elizabeth, beat that.
No, I'm not. I'm actually going to match it with a double fail. one of which is like a stereotypical my family fail. And the other is something we just like never do. So, and I will say our hot water heater has gone out this week. Our router was damaged by lightning and neither of those even reach the top of this situation. We were supposed to go to Tampa for Henry's medical appointment. And this has been like pushed back. And we finally, the center was open. We had like scheduled the appointment. It takes forever to get in there. And we have to, you know, drive down there and get all this insurance approval. It's a total nightmare. So they had sent me an email like reconfirming, but it was at the same time that the 2 hurricanes were coming towards us. And so I thought, well, we're probably going to cancel. So I didn't do the thing where you like reconfirm your appointment. I didn't even look at anything. I just like marked it to look at later in the week. So we packed up the car on Thursday to drive down there. And as I'm driving down, I'm like running through like, oh, I never reconfirmed the appointment. So I open the email and it says, basically, we have moved to virtual because like schools are back open and rates are back up. And we are 2.5 hours down the road, like almost.
Oh my God.
So we're trying to like get in touch because normally they said like, we're going to send you for the lab work. you can come in, like our lab is still open, but like, we're not going to drive down to get lab work. So we're like trying to call, and Jeff and I are like, okay, well, we'll at least drive to Tallahassee and someone will go into the Trader Joe's and then we can turn around and go back. And the kids are like watching a movie in the back of the van. We're like, they don't even know. So we pull into the Trader Joe's. We finally like talk to everybody and the appointment is just can't, they are not open. They're going to like send the lab work. We're going to do a virtual appointment. It's like, all right. So we're trying to figure out, like, how do we save this day? Because, of course, when we get to the Trader Joe's and I, like, get the kids out to have a snack and Jeff's going to run in and do some shopping, they're like, are we at the hotel? Because we had told everyone, like, we had booked, like, a beach hotel so that we, like, had space. And because it was really complicated for just two of us to go because Henry has a lot of anxiety. So we're not sure who he's going to want to take him. Anyway, so the whole family was going to get this little trip. That's canceled. They're all freaking out. So Jeff's like, okay, on the way back, we'll do some geocaching, which is something our family loves to do. And the kids are really into it. We always carry a little bag of, you know, geocache stuff.
For those listeners who might not know what geocaching is.
Such as me.
Okay, geocaching is like, there's a little app and people hide little boxes. Sometimes they're like old ammunition cans or flashlights or things that everything's been taken out of. And there's a little log book and some prizes. And when you find it, you write your name in the logbook and you take a prize and you leave a prize. And they give you the GPS coordinates. And there's a free app on the phone. I guarantee you there's like probably 12 within walking distance of your house right now.
It's like Pokemon though, right? You're not like physically touching things, are you?
No. It's like a physical thing. It's like you find a thing that someone has left and you put in a prize and get a prize. Like little erasers or sometimes there's Lego minifigures. We have like a bag of little things to leave in there in our car. And my kids just think this is the best thing ever.
It's like a treasure hunt, but there's always a treasure nearby.
There's always a treasure nearby. You can do it anywhere.
It's the best things ever. I just wonder when man's inhumanity to man will ruin this like it does everything else. Like ride sharing and
probably right now when I tell other people about it.
Just like bags of poop inside geocaching.
Yeah.
They probably do. Sometimes we get places and they're not there. And the app tells you like how to find it. We always do easy ones so the kids can find it. Okay. So Jeff pulls up the geocache and then we give it to the kids and the kids like call out the directions to us. So they're calling out the directions and I'm like following and I turn into a like dilapidated empty strip club parking lot. And there's just like inappropriate for the children pictures.
Great.
It's just like, you know, but now they're like calling me down to it. So if I would be like, no, we're driving past, but they are like guiding me on this thing. And I'm just like,
great.
Oh my gosh. So anyway, it turns out the geocache was lovely. It was an empty flashlight. It had a ton of good toys inside of it. I think I kind of like parked the van so that the strip club was not part of the like picture of
that
our
day.
Yes. I mean, the good news is it was closed and dilapidated because it could have been a whole different scenario had it not been.
What a great place to hide a geocache, though, is inside a strip club.
Yeah. It's a different kind of geocaching.
Yeah, you're right.
So, yes. So not only did I uncharacteristically not read an email, load the entire family into a van to drive 8 hours for an appointment that wasn't happening, I then took the kids geocaching at a strip club.
That's a fantastic
day. I think this is great. I think this story only gets better as the kids get older, right? Because this will be the type of story that you retell, you know, and like when they get one day, like maybe one of them will be like, wait, what was that place? You know, and like when you can really have a good laugh at it.
Well, they already were like trying to tell my parents because there were Lego minifigures inside this geocache. So this is like the best geocache we've ever found. And they were like, it was in this empty parking lot. My parents were like, oh, where? And I was like, nowhere. No, on the side of the road. Yeah. It was nowhere. Hard to tell what the building was, really. But of course, now they'll know. I took your grandkids to an empty strip club. Sorry.
The things that parents learn from their children's podcasts. All right. That is a good one. Good triumphs, good fails. I have a triumph, which has to do with where I've been over the last couple of weeks. I apply for writer's residencies all the time just because I've always had this dream of like what it would be like to get one of these things where you just go away and you are in the middle of nowhere and you just live in a cabin and someone makes you meals and there's no internet to distract you and all you do is write in the beauty
the dream.
Of nature. Right. Who among us does not share that dream? Whatever, I apply every year and I never ever get in. I've gotten rejected by Yaddo and McDowell, any writers conference, you name it, I've gotten rejected by it. But then this winter, I actually got accepted to
one,
Hambidge residency in Northwestern Georgia. So I got the acceptance letter maybe in February, and the acceptance was for 2 weeks in August. Then I thought it wouldn't happen because of COVID. They closed for a little while, but then after a month or so of being closed and figuring out new procedures, they opened it up and they were like, we're still running the residencies. You're pretty naturally socially distanced. You're just alone in the woods, for fuck's sake. So I decided I was going to do it. I had these 2 weeks of, you know, solitude and no obligations other than to write. And then I forwarded the email to Alia and she was like, hey, there's this part here where it says that some people bring their kids. And at first, I was like, motherfucker, no. The whole point is that I'm not taking care of a kid. But I thought about it a little bit more and I realized, like, that's a little bit old family thinking, right? Like, that is the way I should have responded to that when Lyra was five. If I had been like, I would take Lyra with you to this writer's retreat. But Lyra's 15. She can make her own food. She doesn't even like to talk to human beings. She requires no human interaction. She's also a writer. She's an extremely enthusiastic and talented writer and would really love a week where her whole job was just to write. She doesn't have to do Ossle Tickergum or anything. So I thought I would ask her, and she was game. And Hambidge said, sure, that was fine with them. So I spent 2 weeks in rural Georgia. 1 week, the first week was by myself. The second week was with Lyra, and it was just the two of us in a weird house on top of a mountain, and we wrote all day. Lyra took her isolation so far to the extreme that I would sit out on the porch looking at the beautiful scenery writing, and she never even left her bedroom in the weird little house on a mountain, except for occasionally we would go to swim in a river. And she had been warned ahead of time that there was no internet, so she gritted her teeth and dealt with it. We played cards and watched movies a little bit at night, but really we just wrote like thousands and thousands of words and neither of us really bothered the other one. And it was totally glorious. And I'm really glad that I did not reject Alia's idea out of hand. Like, Alia, I'm sure, would not have pressured me if I'd been like, no, I don't think so. She would have been like, fine, no problem. But it was a really good idea. And I'm glad I did not go with my first instinct and be like, fuck no. It was a wonderful time together where we both got things done that were important to us and bonded, though without speaking, really.
Well, that's awesome. Sometimes that's the best kind.
Yeah, for sure. No pressure.
Those are the moments.
And she probably feels special that she got to go and do this.
I think that she did think it was a writer thing.
Like, yeah, that's cool. Deal.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Like, she saw the other, you know, at dinner, you would go and pick up your dinner at the house where they fix it. And so she saw and, you know, met from a distance some of the other artists there. And, you know, they were like professional novelists and professional artists, studio artists and a jazz singer. You know, they were like real people making their living from art. I think that was cool, too.
That's super cool.
It's a great triumph.
This podcast is brought to you by Progressive Insurance. Whether you're driving, cooking, or doing laundry, Progressive knows the podcasts you listen to go best when they're bundled with another activity, much like how their Progressive home and auto policies go best when they're bundled. Having these two policies together makes taking care of your insurance easier and could help you save, too. Customers who save by switching their home and car insurance to Progressive save nearly $800 on average. That's a whole lot of savings and protection for your favorite podcast listening activities, like going on a road trip, cooking dinner, and even hitting the gym. Yep, your home and your car are even easier to protect when you bundle your insurance together. Find your perfect combo. Get a home and car insurance quote at progressive.com today. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $793 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2021 and May 2022. Potential savings will vary.
Hey, Care and Feeding listeners, it's me, Lucy Lopez. What do ASMR, AI chatbots, and diet culture all have in common? They are all topics explored on Embodied, the Ambie Award-winning weekly podcast from WUNC, North Carolina Public Radio. Each week, acclaimed reporter Anita Rao holds up her journalistic lens to all kinds of things that are sometimes hard to talk about, like sex, health, and relationships. Embodied dives into what some consider taboo to answer important questions about our bodies and our society. Nothing's off limits. Hear from expert guests, including doctors, historians, and psychologists, as they break down everything from the dynamics of egg donation, how couples combat mental health struggles like schizophrenia and OCD, and the profits and pitfalls of the self-care industry. If you need a place to start, I highly recommend checking out the recent episode where Anita interviewed two couples who continued to choose each other after one partner came out as trans. So go ahead, follow Embodied and get new episodes every Friday wherever you listen to podcasts.
All right, before we move on, let's talk some business. So every Thursday is Jamila's Slate Live show. The kids are asleep, except not this Thursday. It's Thursday, September 3rd. The show is off to give all the hardworking people who make it a break. Also, everyone has to recover from last week's incredible Naima episode. But she'll be joined again by amazing guests next week, September 10th, and every Thursday after it. It's a lot of fun. Don't miss it. It's at 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 p.m. Pacific, every Thursday night, except not this week, on Slate's YouTube or Facebook page. If you want to check it out right now, though, we have all the old episodes still archived on Slate's YouTube and Facebook pages, and they're great. We'll put links on our show page. In addition, business number two, sign up for Slate's parenting newsletter. It's a great way to stay up to date on all of our parenting content and shows. It's the best place to be notified about everything we do. Care and feeding, mom and dad are fighting, the kids are asleep. It's basically everything Jamila does. Everything Jamila does for Slate.com and much, much more. Plus, it's a fun personal email from me directly to your inbox. I've been off the last couple of weeks. Now I have so many parenting stories to share from several weeks of fun and excitement on top of a mountain with nothing to do. Sign up at Slate.com/parenting email. If you want even more parenting advice, you should join the Slate Parenting Group on Facebook. It's full of useful and fun parents who have all kinds of great advice for you or who are there to just commiserate sometimes when you need them to commiserate, as I needed them to commiserate when I was complaining about how Harper's Middle School, even though it's all remote, is still starting at 7:45 a.m. every single day for some fucking reason. I took that to the Slate Parenting Facebook page and everyone told me, "That does suck, Dan. You're right to feel angry." Thanks, Slate Parenting. Just search for Slate Parenting on Facebook. In Slate Plus this week, we will be arguing about parenting and astrology, specifically about how millennial parents are all into parenting and astrology, which I think is insane. Here's a quick sneak peek of what you'll hear if you have Slate Plus. How do you think I feel about astrology for children?
How do you think Dan feels about astrology?
I assume it's all hogwash.
Anything that starts with millennial parents are embracing is going to fail to land with.
To the contrary, I think astrology is ideal for children in the same way that superhero movies and Star Wars are ideal for children.
There you go.
To hear segments like that and get ad-free podcasts, sign up for Slate Plus. It's just $35 for your first year. It's a great way to support all your favorite Slate podcasts, and you won't hit a paywall on the site, so you can keep up with all of the journalism that Slate does. So, support Mom and Dad Are Fighting. Go to slate.com/momanddadplus and join Slate Plus today. And finally, whew, so much business. Don't forget to tune in to our final bonus Mom and Dad Are Fighting episode. Thanks to Target, it'll appear in your normal podcast feeds this coming Tuesday. Those have been great, and I think all our listeners have really loved having double the Mom and Dad Are Fighting every week. All right, let's get into our first listener question, as always being read by the wonderful Shasha Leonard.
My younger son, age 5, enjoys dress-up and imaginative play, which includes dressing up in princess dresses. We are totally fine with this and are happy to buy him dresses along with all the other costumes. Wonder Woman, Superman, Ninja, Chef, Monster, etc. Like a lot of kids, he gets very intense about certain play and then cycles on to the next thing. And right now we are big time into dresses. Again, totally fine. The situation. The other day he asked for a girl's bathing suit just for fun. And I didn't really know what to say. On one hand, I'm fine with it. My husband is a little more uncomfortable with the idea, but also, in the end, fine with it. I actually don't think he will want to swim in it at the pool, since even at age 5, he is not comfortable with people outside the family seeing him in dresses. That makes me a bit sad that social norms are hitting him so early. Maybe I answered my own question. We have asked him if he likes dresses better. We try to avoid calling clothing girls' clothes or boys' clothes. And he says no. He just likes all the clothes. I would like to hear your thoughts for parents who don't have a lot of experience with fluid gender norms. Thank you.
Embrace it. I think that in general, my work as a parent, it's twofold. I have to teach my child how to interact with the world around her, right? How to survive, how to engage with people, how to be respectful of other people. I also am charged with creating a world for her, right? A world in which she can be herself, a world in which the values that I want to instill in her are centered. And that's not always in ways that they are centered or experienced by people outside of our home or outside of our community or outside of our city or wherever. And with that, I think that allowing a child to embrace things that are not typically assigned to or thought of as to be, you know, boy things is, I just think it's important. I think that if we have the courage to do this, if we're able to allow our little boys to wear princess dresses and our girls to wear baseball uniforms or whatever it is, and we teach them not to shrink and not to apologize for it, the world is and will become more comfortable with it. Even empowering them to be themselves can come at a cost. And I get that. And I think that with every bit of harm reduction that you're able to do while still allowing him to do these things, if that makes sense. So if there are places that you think may be particularly hostile, if there are family members that have, you know, outdated attitudes about certain things, that these are not the spaces in which we go to. And if we have to be in these spaces, maybe this is when we adjust a little bit, you know, perhaps until you're old enough to really be comfortable with somebody saying something unkind to you and to know that that's coming. The world ought to catch up to your son. Your son should not move backward to adjust to the world. So if he wants a little girl's bathing suit, then a little girl's bathing suit is fine. You still don't know yet if this is a matter of simply exploring fashion or exploring gender identity or just exploring color and texture. You know, like there's a lot that's unclear here. I think that more than most parents, you've received what could be a hint, right? This could be a breadcrumb. This could be something that's telling you that your child may not identify as a boy. I don't think that you're getting a lot of evidence or anything that points to this, but this possibly could be the little thing that, you know, years later when you think back to what your then daughter's childhood was like, you know, and what you may have missed, realizing that, okay, it started with the clothes. It could be that your son is going to be a fashion designer and make women's swimwear. You know, I just think that you owe it to him to allow him to be as free as possible and explore as much as you can. I feel like I'm probably saying the same thing over and over again, but I just want to emphasize that this is okay and this is good. And you all are right for allowing him to embrace it. It's the people outside that are not comfortable that are the problem.
I completely agree. Like, I come down on get the bathing suit. All three of my boys have loved playing dress up with a variety of things, including skirts, dresses, all sorts of things. And I think, Jamila, kind of what you hit on is something we talked about in Tuesday's bullying episode, where we talked about kind of guarding against those opportunities. And that's certainly, I talked about Oliver and his pink shoes and how much pink is his favorite color and he has just wanted pink shoes. And I'm always okay with that. Although we do have conversations like, do you want to talk about what you're going to say when someone comments on these pink shoes? Because I just know that that is going to happen. Yeah. Or, you know, when someone assumes that you are a girl because you're wearing these, do you want to kind of practice that and rehearse that with me? I think with the bathing suit, a couple of things to think about is that one, like, Oliver in particular, when we're at a store, loves the patterns and the things that are on girls' clothing. Mm-hmm. And so often once he gets it on or tries it on, he doesn't like the cut or the feel of it. So, you know, you don't know if it's really about the way it looks or, like Jamila, like you said, like the texture and the variety of colors and things that you have in girls' clothing mm-hmm. versus boys' clothing. But I think particularly if it's dress up, it's totally fine. And then you can move from there in terms of like, what are your rules about wearing things out of the house? Like, we have rules about our dress up clothes, going different places. But I think you're doing a great job. If you're, it seems like you and your husband have discussed things and you come down on, this is cool, let's let him play around with this stuff. And so much of what children, you know, learn and experience is through this time of play. And the last thing you want to do is hint through this that experiencing different things than what is gender normal or what society has defined as that is wrong. So I think if he wants to try on a bathing suit and you're cool with buying a bathing suit and that jives with the family rules you've already established in terms of like maybe you don't buy dress up clothes or you don't allow regular clothes to be dress up clothes. We've had issues with that. As long as all of this fits those other rules that you've established, I think go ahead, let him play around and see, you know, where it leads. The only thing I would also think is that this wouldn't even be a question if it were a girl asking for a pair of like swim trunks or a boy's bathing suit. Like, because so often we say like, well, girls can wear boys' things, but boys can't wear girls' things. And so I think if you already feel like, well, one way would be fine, then the other way should absolutely be fine.
I do think that a lot of folks would struggle with this with a little girl, you know, maybe not a toddler, but I think bathing suits are the, you know, more than any other item of clothing are so, you know, I think a little girl's bathing suits and how there are adults who don't want their kids wearing two pieces, you know, when they're very small or, yeah, or, you know, when you turn 7 or 8, you know, that's it. You can't wear the two pieces anymore. I think we do get funny about little girls' chest because Nyima complains, you know, or she used to, now we're approaching training bra period, about the fact that her father and brother can be what she calls nipple naked in public. You know, they can wear that, they can be completely shirtless and she can't.
Yeah, I guess I was thinking more of like board shorts as an option for girls swimming shorts all the time. There are swim shorts available. But I get what you're like, yes, if your daughter came and said, I just want to wear board shorts.
Yeah. You're right.
Right. Wear a shirt. Like that. Yeah. Yeah. You're absolutely true. But bathing suits definitely, because that's the other thing. Like our, you know, girls' swimsuits are very
political.
Yeah. Okay, Dan, sorry. What do you think?
There's a tension in this letter that I worry a little bit that you guys aren't either are not seeing or are ignoring in favor of being super positive toward this letter writer, who I think in general is trying to do the right thing. But I got a real sense of like, I doth protest too much from this letter, right? Like how many times in this letter did she say, we're fine with it, we're fine with it. Well, my husband's not so fine with it, but he's fine with it.
I think they're uncomfortable. I agree with that.
So I'm interested in what caused this discomfort. And I'm particularly interested, and this ties, I think, to what you were saying, Jamila, in the fact that what caused the discomfort was not princess dresses, which it's interesting to me in 2020 are a somewhat more acceptable way among a particular kind of like parent who thinks of themselves as broad-minded for a boy to express a desire to wear traditionally girls' clothing than a swimsuit. Like the fact that it was a swimsuit is what all of a sudden made her go, what do I do with this? What do I do about this? This is what led to her sort of like mini crisis that caused her to write in. I'm not surprised by that. And I think it's worth exploring that a little bit more because I think it ties not only into questions of like what swimwear represents for people. I think what is striking this mother is that this is a moment at which it seems like it's moving beyond pretend play into the accoutrements of real life, right? Whether the kid wears the swimsuit out to a swimming pool or not, a swimsuit is real life in the way that a princess dress is not real life. Even for little girls, princess dresses are not real life. They are dress up and play. And I think what we're not quite getting at yet in our conversation about this is the tension that these parents feel about what seems to them like a step beyond what they've been comfortable with up till now towards something that seems intuitively bigger and different. I wrote to a friend of mine about this question, Sean Williams, who wrote a really great piece for Slate a couple of years ago about his child, Barnaby, who at the time was totally obsessed with My Little Pony stuff and had My Little Pony onesies and backpacks and stuff that they loved to wear. And Sean wrote about that experience and the ways that kids at Barnaby School were treating them as a result of this. And you know, I asked Sean if there is any advice that he would want to give a parent who's sort of right at this moment of trying to figure out whether a kid's desire to dress in non-traditional clothing represents anything other than play. Mm-hmm. One thing that he said that I thought was useful is that, first of all, it's worth knowing that to a kid, those delineations aren't as clear as they are to us. To a kid, this does not necessarily mean the same kind of step as it might mean to an adult intuitively. The example Sean gave was, we make all these connections between the things that our kids get infatuated with and the future people they might be. But, you know, a kid might get obsessed with, you know, going to sleep with a toy garbage truck every night. And that does not mean they're necessarily going to go into sanitation as a career. Sean, too, basically said the same thing that we're all saying, which is, you know, embrace this opportunity to explore and for your child to learn more things about themselves. But I think one thing I would really urge these parents is at this point in your child's life to do your best not to think about the things that your child is exploring in the context of, well, what is their life going to be like when they're 15 or 20 or 25? Because I think you just don't know yet. And I think the further you go down that road, the more stress and anxiety you're going to cause yourself and that you're going to put onto your kid. Yes, I think it's worth it, as Elizabeth and Jamila both say, to prepare and protect your kid from problems that they might have if they choose in the end to start wearing clothing that is non-traditional out in public. It's worth it to prepare them. But I think preparing yourself for some future in which your child is trans or non-binary is premature at this point. I like Sean's advice of lean into the freedom to explore that you've given your child. You've got a whole different set of things to address somewhere down the road if your child starts identifying as one gender or the other or neither. Right now, the situation you have is that you have a very inquisitive, very curious child who is curious about a lot of things, and just the same way that you would if it was garbage trucks or fire trucks or airplanes or dolls or whatever, allow that experimentation and exploration to flourish. But don't get too wrapped up at this point in what that means for you down the road. And given the sort of discomfort that I think is very present in this letter, as much as the woman who wrote in is really, I think, doing a wonderful job at being as supportive as she possibly can, Sean suggested, and I would back up the suggestion, it's worth reaching out to an organization that can be helpful with issues of gender fluidity as things start to develop with your child, or even if they don't start to develop with your child, because these are useful things to know anyways. And he suggests the Ackerman Institute for the Family. They're at ackerman.org, ackerman.org. But I think it's worth it for you to start to know what these feelings are and what this discomfort represents, so that if the time does come that there are bigger issues you need to talk to your child about, you're not approaching them from this position of, oh, I guess it's okay with us, but instead you have a clearer sense of why this is important and why this matters, which I guess is a little bit sort of contradictory advice. Don't put all your eggs in this basket right now, but also prepare in case these eggs go in this basket. I guess that's the advice.
So basically what I said.
Yeah, so whatever Jamila said is what I agree with.
I just want to say, I think that obviously, no, this does not mean your family must start preparing for a life in which your child is trans and, you know, thinking about what 15 and 25 look like. I think that all families should be prepared for the possibility that their child is trans, right? Like, so I think right. It's something that, because you're now you've got something before you that could be, right? It could be so many other things as well, but it could be a signal that this is going beyond play, that I think just thinking about that, right? And what that would mean to you, because they're grappling with what it means to them that their child wants to simply wear girls' clothing, right? So it may be that there's some work they need to do that other families that would perhaps be, you know, more prepared for their child to be trans, right? Or gender non-conforming. There may be some things that this family just simply needs to do. I just wanted to say one thing that's possible. You know, it could be that a swimsuit, which is such a political piece of clothing in so many ways and something that is so gender specific, that this is the line where it goes from, okay, we're cool with this, to like, I don't know how I feel. It also could be the logistics of the penis, right? Because in a girl's bathing suit, unless it's one of the little, you know, shorts sets, and even with those, they're not designed to manage that sort of equipment. So perhaps the possibility that the letter writer is largely concerned about what happens if your penis is poking out in this girl's swimsuit.
That's what I like. We have rules about that exact situation because my kids like to play Maui or superhero, mm-hmm. whatever, in which they're running around in their underwear, which is totally fine here. Maybe they're, you know, tying a skirt around their waist and they don't have underwear on, which I have just said, that's totally fine in the house and in this play space. But we cannot play that way outside of this house because our penises are not for other people to see with, you know, in public in general. You know, so I think that is where whatever rules you have about dress up or clothing or whatever that is in your house, that extends here too, right? Regardless of what piece of clothing it is. I agree with both of you, and even on like a bigger level, that these opportunities when they're little, when they ask us for things that feel awkward or feel like these big decisions, but they're asking for something little, are opportunities to demonstrate to your child that you hear them and that you are there for them, regardless of what that question is, to say through your actions or through your response, like, I'm always here to hear you. You're not going to get judgment from me. Now, I may give you advice that you don't like. I may say to you, the world is very cruel and here, you know, here's how we have to prepare for that. But if you think of this as like the first time they're just telling you something that, one, like how cool that they're able to ask you that, because I'm sure there are kids even at 5 who would know, I can't ask my parents for that, you know, to have a girl's bathing suit because I would receive this litany of reasons why that was inappropriate. So I think, one, to feel good about that, even if you feel awkward about it. Like a lot of parenting is you being, you as the parent feeling like this was handled totally different when I was a child or the way I saw it, and I'm going to do something different. And that is awkward. It feels awkward and it feels like, am I doing the right thing? Am I, negotiating that boundary? So I guess when I read the letter, that's kind of what I thought, is that this is different and this is new. And these parents, the letter writer knows the right thing to do, but it still feels strange, and that's okay. And keep being available to your child. And Dan, I think that's good advice. Like, if this is a place where you feel awkward and you feel weird, go educate yourself. This is a time to do that so that when, however you experience gender fluidity, you are educated and prepared for that. But also, this decision is small in comparison to maybe where your brain has gone.
I'm now envisioning them sending their child out in a girl's swimsuit with a codpiece just covering the junk. Just to follow local community mores. Thank you, listener, for writing in. This is a super interesting question. There's a lot of really good writing out there on this, including Sean's piece in Slate from a couple of years ago. We're going to link to that in our show notes. And best of luck. And I hope that the swimsuit that you do eventually get for this child is beautiful. If you want us to help you, listeners, send in your question or your conundrum to momanddad@slate.com, or do like this listener did and post it in our Slate Parenting Facebook group. All right, on to our second question. Once again, it's being read by the inimitable Sasha Leonard.
My 12-year-old daughter is a massive extrovert, and quarantine has been especially tough on her. She does get to see friends in person regularly in socially distant hangouts and through a pod with another family. But this social time isn't enough for her. And as a result, she wants to be with me, or next to me, or on me, pretty much all of the time. I know that I am lucky to have a pre-adolescent daughter who actually enjoys hanging out with me. But now, she follows me around the house, she lounges on my bed playing with her phone while I'm trying to work, she calls me on the phone when I leave the house to get groceries or to go for a run. If I am sitting in a chair reading or watching TV, she will wedge herself in next to me or behind me. Keep in mind, this is a 5'5", nearly grown person, all over me, all the time. She now wants me to lay in bed with her when she's going to sleep at night, and sometimes will call for me just to know that I am close by. I have tried gently asking her for physical space, and I have tried explaining that her clinging is distracting while I'm trying to work from home. but she seems to have moved from a social need to some sort of anxiety that she's projected onto me. I would have tried getting her to talk about this, but she doesn't seem aware of anxiety manifesting in this way. I'm getting really frustrated with the constant physical contact, distraction, and general neediness. I haven't been so in demand since she was a toddler. How can I deal with this in a gentle way? I don't want her to feel rejected at this very delicate age and during this stressful time. And if this is anxiety related, I want to help her deal with it compassionately without losing my damn mind.
You need to set some boundaries. Seriously.
I mean, I think she has. The kid is ignoring those
boundaries. No, I know. When she says gently, she says like, oh, honey, I need some space. And the child like moves a half an inch. For the moms and dads out there that are home all the time with your kids and you are in the same space, you have to be able to say, I need some time alone. This is what time alone looks like. If that means setting a timer and saying, I will see you at this time. And then you have to enforce that boundary.
Yeah.
The boundary has to also come with dedicated alone time with this child where you are meeting her needs. And if that means inviting her to things, so I'm going to go for a walk. I'd love to spend some time with you. Would you like to come with me? I'm folding laundry. Would you like to sit in here and chat with me while I fold the laundry? To meet those times when you say, I'm about to get on a phone call, or I have, you know, 1 hour of work that I need to sit down and do, and then I will check in with you. So I think it's important to let her know when you are going to be there, when those moments are, and then follow through with those, but also set some boundaries for yourself. Like you are in fact living with a toddler. I am experiencing all of this with my children. And even with the little ones though, you have to set boundaries, if not for you and this time, but for every other person your daughter is going to come in contact with in the future. Hmm. Because if it's not you, it's going to be someone else at some point. And this is not the behavior you want with a partner. You want her to feel comfortable with, you know, with herself and knowing what these feelings are like. Now, I do think if you really think this is anxiety, or even you just have the tiniest hint, I'm going to suggest that you go see a therapist and either have her go or you two go together, whatever. There's lots of virtual options right now, but giving her someone to talk about this stuff, if it turns out to be nothing, then all you've done is taught your daughter that mental health checkups are important and a regular part of life. And if it is something more, then you've given her a tool to deal with this. I don't know specifically with 12-year-olds, but this is definitely something we've discussed with our family therapist, because Henry's anxiety manifests in this way, like in the being with us. And we have talked specifically about strategies, and we talk with her about them, and then she helps Henry understand them. So getting a middle person involved here is not, I think, a bad thing. But when I read this, my first thought was just like, I know you want to be gentle, but sometimes being gentle means providing a line, saying where that line is, but then also figuring out how to meet her needs somewhere else. But maybe I don't have a 12-year-old daughter, so, you know, what do I know?
And I know Dan is the veteran of 12-year-olds, but no longer, because he only raises teenagers these days.
That's right.
But I just want to say, one, on some level, like, hey, letter writer, you're strumming my pain with your fingers, singing my life with your words. You know, my daughter is often on me. She's 7, granted, but it's like, even when we sit next to each other on the couch, like, she's always touching me, like, at least, even if it's just her feet on me. But it's also come to be like a sweet little intimate kind of thing that we have, you know, like sometimes when I'm driving, I reach behind her and, you know, like I grab her foot, or, you know, I tap her on the leg. Like, we are a lot more physically close these days than we were before COVID. And so even though your daughter is a bit older, know that there are a lot of parents that are out here with you experiencing the same thing. However, and I definitely want to co-sign everything that Elizabeth just said, you kind of asked your daughter if this is anxiety, and she was like, nah. And you're like, so it's not anxiety. It's absolutely anxiety. The world has been snatched from under all of our feet. And I'm sure to some extent you are impacted by it emotionally and spiritually and perhaps professionally. And socially. And so your daughter is experiencing all of those things, but she's 12. So she has none of the coping mechanisms that you have as an adult. Parents are not superhumans, right? Like, We are suffering. We are depressed. We need space. We're having a really rough time right now. So I don't want you to feel guilty for feeling overwhelmed or feeling crowded by your daughter. But I think that it's important that you give her a bit more grace than you are giving her, while also affirming that need to create boundaries so that you have the space you need to be extra supportive. And also, as Elizabeth said, so that she does not have a codependent relationship with her partners, with her girlfriends, with, you know, other people who come in her life.
I think you can also be really clear that there is a larger lesson at play here. I mean, with a 12-year-old, you can be clear about this in a way that you maybe can't be with a 7-year-old or with kids Elizabeth's kid's age. But, you know, with Harper, who also is a really social kid and really likes to be with us a lot, though it doesn't really manifest in anxiety the way that I think, you're right, this kid clearly is manifesting anxiety. We've started just being really clear with her and saying, look, people who love each other have the right to, and it's totally normal for them to not want to be with each other every second of the day, to want to have time on their own. That doesn't have anything to do with whether you love the other person or not. And it's totally healthy for people to want to have time by themselves and time with the people that they love. That's just like a normal thing that everyone wants. And then you will want it too someday, even if you don't exactly feel like it right now. And at 12, this kid, I think, is old enough to start hearing that message. And you don't necessarily have to say so that eventually when you have a partner, you're not like a clingy, needy, crazy person or your friends or whatever. And you don't even necessarily have to make it about your struggles if you're feeling struggles, although that might be helpful in this conversation. But you can also just make it about, this is just the way things are in the world, in loving relationships between people. Those people like to have time with each other, and they like to have time on their own to just be themselves, because they are still the individual people that they were even before they got into this relationship. And I value that time for myself, and you can value that time for yourself too. And I want you to start to learn how to do that. But yeah, you know, like you guys, I've had plenty of experiences with this, with Harper in particular, who's the exact opposite of Lyra and who does want to be with us a lot and will drape her now enormous 13-year-old body all over us when we are just like sitting in a chair. And it can be really hard for a parent to say, essentially, I don't want to be with you right now, because I think to a parent that reads as rejection, and kids are very eager when they know it's in their interest to make us see that they feel that they read it as rejection. But I also think that kids will actually be fine, and in nearly every case, with a parent just saying, I would like some time by myself right now, go read a book. I think it would be totally worth it for you, letter writer, to talk to a therapist about this child and their anxiety, and for your child to talk to a therapist. But I also think your kid will overall, in the long run, be completely fine if you say, for the next half an hour, I'm going to be in the bathroom taking a shit and you need to leave me alone, or whatever. And things will work out a lot better for you and everyone else if you set those clear boundaries.
Agreed.
You don't have to use those exact words. That's just a suggestion for a script you might want to follow. Good luck, listener. Your daughter sounds delightful. Maybe have her call Harper on the phone and they can have a chat for a while. If you want us to help you, send in your question or conundrum to momanddad@slate.com and we'll do our best to help you out. Let's move on to recommendations. Elizabeth, what do you have for us?
I am recommending something that we use at our homeschool table, but really you could use anywhere. But it's great because all of my kids can use this and use it kind of on their own. So you can set them up and get some time. And this is a magnetic Tanagrams set. And ours is from Chuckle and Roar, which is sold at Target. But the magnetic set is so nice because even the little ones can use it. So Teddy, it has a variety of patterns. So one, you could just make patterns on your own, but it has kind of patterns where you're trying to fit these pieces into. And the starter sets just have the shapes. So like, you know, one through whatever, he just has to match the shapes, which at 3 he can do. And because it's magnetic, when he touches it, it doesn't move all the way around. So this has been great. I know there have been a lot of questions about, like, what do I do with my little one so that I can get some time? This is something you can sit them down. It's pretty quiet. If you're nearby, he can mostly figure it out. And I can, you know, give him little, like, oh, that looks nice or cute. You made a bunny. And then he goes on to the next one. And it's not something that has, like, a ton of pieces or a huge cleanup. So I highly recommend this. The 8-year-old also loves loves the harder challenges on it. So I can also set him up to go play this or say, like, I bet you can't do this one, or let's time you and see how long it takes you to do this one. It took me this amount of time, which I just make up. So it's a nice toy to keep some kids entertained. It also travels well. So again, that's magnetic Tanagrams from Chuckle and Roar.
That's a great recommendation. Jamila, what do you have?
I am recommending the series Moesha, starring pop singer, actress, multi-hyphenate, Black Princess Brandy.
The real Cinderella.
The real Cinderella. I think, like, for millennials and maybe younger Gen Xers, Brandy was such, like, somebody posted an old 17 magazine cover. Like, I think it was Brandy and the singer Monica, like their, you know, their covers. And I'm like, these kids don't know. There was a time where you didn't get Black girls on these magazines every month, right? Like, if I go, like, any given month, I can go look at Cosmopolitan, 17, Marie Claire, Vogue, et cetera. And I'm going to see at least, you know, one or two women of color. I'm definitely going to see at least one or two women of color, right? That was not the case back then. And Brandy was our, like, she was royalty. And I personally did not like the show as a kid. I thought that the name was weird. I thought that Moesha was like a white person's take on a Black girl name. I'm sorry. I just still think we have so many better sounding. I've never heard of a Moesha. I think it should have been called Aisha. It's my personal beef I've been holding on to since like 1994 when it debuted or whatever, 1995. But anyway, I was really big into hip hop and Brandy was so perfect and shiny and cute. And she just wasn't really my cup of tea at the time. And as an adult, I'm like, oh my God, I missed out on the best show. It's about a teenager being raised by a recently married widower father. She's got a younger brother who's annoying. She's got the standard sitcom, you know, homeboy next door who comes by and eats all the family's food. You know, she's got girlfriends. The show has, in many ways, you know, there's some things about it that'll drive you crazy, but for the most part, it's aged really well. She's a little feminist and a poet, and it's so cute. It's a coming of age story. She's growing up in Los Angeles, California, balancing having a new stepmom who also teaches at her school, you know, missing her mother and just coming of age as a young woman. And it stars Brandy. So I would say that. And if you were a Brandy girl or a guy or a person in your youth and you didn't watch Versus last night, there are these battles between musicians. Some of them have been between producers and others have been between rappers. Some have been between singers. So Brandy and Monica is also a singer, went head to head. They were in the same room, socially distanced, and there's always been tension between them, and they address that. You know, they have a very famous song together, The Boy Is Mine, which is the only Grammy winning record that either of them have. And they've got, you know, over two decades of complicated history, and they played and they sang and it was beautiful. And if you want something that'll uplift your spirit, it's all about Brandy right now. So, Brandy, I apologize to you for not loving you when I was a little girl. I didn't get it. I get it now. You're everything. And yeah, so watch Moesha and watch Brandy versus Monica on YouTube.
I just checked in 1998. Moesha was a semi-popular name in America. 100 babies per million were named Moesha. So it wasn't like in the top 100 or anything. Now it's very rare. It's the 20,543rd most popular name in America.
That's because the show had debuted in what year? 1995 or 1996?
Right. So, but
they named her after.
So you think it was purely reflective of people name? Well, so 100%. It drove the culture.
I appreciate that people wanted to pay tribute to such a great show and great character. I get it. I totally get it. It just wasn't my favorite. I'll admit that. I could have came up with 100 Black girl names that I think would have been better than Moesha, but I still love it. I think Monique, it's a very good Black girl name that a lot of people have. I have a cousin named Monique. I have a cousin named Keisha.
You're going to be like those people who read children's books to their kids, but they just like replace one word in it that they just don't like, that they think is objectionable. You're going to re-record every episode of Moesha, but just change everyone saying Moesha to Monique.
Yes.
And then show it to Naima.
Yes. No, we're already watching it. No, she started watching it with her stepmom because I was still like, I don't really like Moesha. And she got into it with her stepmom. And I was like, okay, you know what? I'll give it a shot. And like three episodes in, I was like, this is the best show I've ever, like, I can't believe I denied myself all these years.
Coming soon to Barbie Theater. Yeah.
Yes, definitely coming soon to Barbie Theater. And the crazy thing is the parents are in their late 30s, but like you see the tremendous difference between late 30s boomers and late 30s Xers and millennials. Like, I'm like, I identify with the kids to this day. Like, when I watch it, I'm like, I am not y'all. I'm Moesha and her friends. You two are regular grownups, and I don't see it.
I think it's possible I would not identify with the kids. I would identify with old-ass parents. All right, good recommendation. Good pair of recommendations. I'm recommending, so sometimes a great movie comes out and your kids are just like a little bit too young for it, so you don't see it with them. Then you forget about it, and then the years go by. Sometimes it doesn't even take that long for you to forget about it. But anyways, this is all a roundabout way of saying I showed Lyra the movie Lady Bird the other night, directed by Greta Gerwig, which came out just like 2 years ago. And boy, oh boy, did she love the hell out of it. And I loved it even more than I did the first time that I saw it. So the lesson is, show Lady Bird to your teenager. It rules.
Nice.
All right. And that's our show. One more time, if you've got a question, email us at momanddad@slate.com or post it to the Slate Parenting Facebook group. Just search for Slate Parenting on that very platform. And of course, don't forget to join us this coming Tuesday for our very final special bonus episode. Mom and Dad Are Fighting is produced by Rosemary Belson. For Jamila Lemieux, Elizabeth Newcamp, I'm Dan Coyce. Thanks for listening.